Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez, representing for the Fatherhood is Lit podcast. Thank you once again for listening, for taking the time to listen to us. Today, I wanted to do something a little bit special. I wanted to grab a friend that I've known for, I would say, probably the past year now, and he's become a real close friend of mine. His name is Chad Milner. What's up, Chad?
What's shaking, man?
Yeah, man. So, you know, I told you before the actual phone call, I wanted to do something different with you. I got a whole bunch of interviews here that are about, like, cool topics about, you know, activities that we do with our kids and that lifestyle. But I keep getting a lot of dads asking me about co-parenting, man. And, you know, you told me a story back, man, I'll say like a month ago about how you got custody of your daughter. And I think this is something that we need to share to the world and hopefully encourage other dads to not give up, you know, not give up the fight to be there for their kids when they're not necessarily with their baby mothers or the mother of their children. So thank you once again, man. I know this, I don't want to get too touchy with this, but I know it's going to be fun.
Oh, it's fine. Oh, we can go anywhere, man. We're going to have some fun.
but before we begin, man, how many kids you got, man? Let the world know.
I have one child, my wonderful 8-year-old daughter, Sydney, and I am the father figure to my 13-year-old nephew, Courtney.
Yeah. And you guys also took it to the next level and started a podcast together, man. Like, I know it was just you and your daughter at first, but now you got your nephew on it too, huh?
Yeah. Well, what happened was I've been working in music and recording and producing music for about 20 years now. And, I'm a writer and I started a blog called Single Dad Ventures in 2012. And just as a love letter to everyone who just gave prayers and stuff and well wishes while I went through everything, getting my daughter back and when my mother passed. And one day I just said it as a joke in the car to my mother, you know, my daughter loves to talk. I should just give her a podcast and let her talk for 5 minutes. And I said, oh, a good idea. So 4 years ago, January, it'll be 4 years ago, we started. And then, you know, just kids being kids and always being busy, we don't get to be as consistent as we'd like to, and because they're kids, so it's like, hey, let's do this today. And they're like, oh, we don't feel like it. And I'm like, I know y'all are kids, but I'm trying to teach y'all like how to be business people, because it'll, but they don't care.
Oh man, they sure don't, man. I know you heard that that interview we had with Lamar Tyler, and it's like, man, getting kids to do business, bro, you just gotta wait for them to be ready. It's like pressuring them it's a no-go. You just ruin everything.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, so that's why I'm kind of cool with it not being so consistent, because really, like, with all the other things that I have going on, I'm okay with this being kind of just small. And, you know, if you know about it, it's a little cherry on top, because I'm not one of those that believes in just, I want my kids to be kids as long as possible. And the most important thing about it is when they're older, you know, they'll remember, hey, we just did this thing with you when podcasts were beginning to be a thing. And you just gave us the opportunity to listen. Like, because the most important thing I think that we can do as parents is listen to our kids. Yeah. You know, you go see a therapist. The first two questions they ask you are, why are you here? And what's your relationship like with your parents? And if you look back at anything, every one of our issues that we have as adults and how it just affects us, it's usually rooted somewhere, somehow, in something our parents either said to us or we didn't feel like we were listened to.
Yeah. Or that they didn't say. Right. Where it's like,
right.
Sometimes we listen to our kids, but we don't listen with a purpose or with intention, where we're just listening to say, yeah, that's beautiful. You know, like when they tell you, dad, I got this new toy, and you just be like, yeah, that's great. Not really caring, you know?
Right. So there's at least this here that, you know, they can say once a week, sometimes, you know, or even if they didn't want to do it, you know, I always threw it out there once a week. Hey, let's record a podcast so that they knew, okay, you got 40 minutes or so where you guys are running the show and you know I'm here to listen and advise you and meet y'all where you're at. And then, you know, like I told you before, the interesting thing that I've noticed in how schools are teaching, kids are learning to think in algorithms.
Yeah.
So while, like, you know, I started with digital recording and stuff 20 years ago, and like maybe the first year I was recording vocals on tapes and cassettes and stuff and like four tracks, but then it became all digital. Or you know, being in at the beginning, you know, right before the first tech bubble burst, you know, we are in our head, we're analog, and that's no matter what, how we're going to see the world, but they're born into this. So in a quick second, they're going to get everything that within a year, they're going to get by nature what we had to learn. So why not teach them now? You know, here's some things about doing business and you know, some context behind YouTube and all that stuff. So, you know, like if my nephew's 13 in a couple years, he's going to be college and looking for an internship. You know, while your peers are working for free, you can get paid because you can say, I've got 7 years of experience because I've been doing this since I was 11 years old or whatever, you know?
You gave him the exposure that he needed already, which is right. What, which is just a dream for everybody. Like not just not just for you, but for your kids too, where now you're exposing them, getting them prepared. And this is your nephew.
Yeah.
Which is even crazier.
Yeah. This is right. You know, it's kind of like one of the things I've learned, and it's the older I get, especially because I'm a dad, so it's my father. You know, I personally feel like, you know, moms tell you, here's what you do right now, but dads are kind of just seed sowers. We, you know, you just kind of throw something out there and you say something that you know they're not going to get right now, but it's there. And you just constantly throw a little water and eventually it's going to grow into something. And then you're going to go, oh, it'll make sense. Like, especially my nephew, I find myself a lot of times speaking to him saying, all right, I know what I'm saying to you. Like, let's just say if there's a situation with, you know, cause he calls my daughter his sister or my mother or even his mother. And, you know, without saying it, it'll be like, you know, here's how you have to articulate things in dealing with women, because what they're saying on the surface is not what they mean. Like there's a whole lot of, like if my daughter's upset about something, what she's telling you she's upset about, that's not it.
Yeah.
So try your best to ignore what's being said or don't react to what's being said to you or about you or in front of you, and just wait for it to see what's under the surface. Cause eventually it'll come out.
No, that's
you know, right now, Right now, it don't make too much sense to him. But when he's 21 and he's got a girlfriend and she's mad, it's like, oh, it has something to do with school, nothing to do with you. You know, he'll be like, oh, okay, you'll be ahead of the game.
He'll know something else is up. That's right. Crazy because my son just turned 13, so it's one of those things where it's like what you're saying now. I just lived it like maybe a month ago or 2 months ago, and it's like, man, like this. This is going to be insane as he grows up, because it's weird. It's like a lot of parents, they don't talk about these type of things, right? But they also don't talk about like the nitty gritty of puberty, right? Puberty and dating and all of that. And it's like, man, oh man, these next 7 years are going to be crazy. But since I got three of them, I get to do it with the first one. And then hopefully the second and the third one will be a little bit easier.
Right. And see, in my instance, that's where things get a little more interesting and fun, because I'm single.
Yeah.
So my nephew, who's now 13, like if he was wondering how and why I moved certain ways before, it's about to make a little more sense, where something my daughter may not get, you know, he's going to be like, oh, okay. So even when my daughter's a little older, he can be the eyes that watch but just know somebody sees it all, you know?
Yeah, something else is there. But yeah,
and
wait, so you say, so before we even get into all of that though, before you could even do anything like that, you had to, you say you're a single dad. So you had to get custody of your daughter to give yourself that I guess not knowledge boost, but to give you like that insight where now life is different, because if you're a single dad and you take custody of your daughter, you weren't raised as a girl. Right. So now you got to use all of those skill sets that you just said you're trying to teach your nephew on your own daughter. Right. Where you're looking at her and you're like, wait, something else is brewing here. Right. So
that's
what happened? Like, how did you get custody? What went on?
OK. Well,
how long have you had custody of your daughter?
I've had custody of my daughter since she was 5 months. So here's the really condensed version of my story. I went to college in Atlanta and I met my daughter's mother there. After we both graduated, we lived there for a while, 24 years old. Turned out she was pregnant and we were going to get married anyway. Mm-hmm. But she was a military brat. So our parents lived in Virginia, in the Hampton Roads area, but her family's from Buffalo. So as a New Yorker, we compromised and said, all right, we're going to move to Long Island where my family is, because it's in the middle of everybody.
At 24 years old.
Yeah. Okay. 24, turning 25. My daughter, you know, God and her had other plans. Like, her due date was March 7th. She came Valentine's Day, 2011. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's mother still has some complications. We thought it was like preeclampsia. Turns out she has stage 4 cancer.
Okay.
Oh, so we moved from New York City to Buffalo to be around her family there and her support system, where most of them were. And that was March 2011. And then in October 2011, we moved to Virginia where her parents were. And I guess it just kind of worked out that way, just looking at how things turned out. Mm-hmm. Because I never had the greatest relationship with her parents. And well,
who does? Like, let's keep it real. Like, what dad out there has a great relationship with the in-laws? Cause like, I love my mother-in-law, but I could hate her too, bro. I can do both any given moment.
Yeah, this was there was dad, but it was like, I just seen and heard enough from my girl to know, oh, we dealing with a different breed here. So when we moved to, before we moved, like, packed my daughter in the car to go down with the grandparents of Virginia, the mother asked, is it okay? Would you sign over power of attorney or anything so that, you know, while you're there or whatever, we can sign off on stuff. I was like, no, mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Because I know they like to play with the legal system.
Before you continue with that, I think you're 1,000% correct. I just took a vacation with my wife and I signed a living will and a power of attorney. Mm-hmm. And I did it with my mother-in-law. Yeah, and I did it because, you know, something happens on the plane. I don't really want my family or her family fighting over the kids. I know who's best for my kids. So it's like, all right, I'm just gonna fill out this will. Anything happens, they're all going to my mother-in-law, all the money, all the assets, everything. I want no beef. So yeah, it's like, once you sign that paper, though, shit could go left.
Right. And since I knew who I was dealing with, that's why I didn't. Like, if it were my parents, fine, without a question, sure. But I know how they like to play with stuff. So my daughter moved with them down October 14, 2011. Mm-hmm. A month, maybe a few weeks later, top of November, I moved to Virginia. And they're saying, just because of paperwork and stuff like that, like, you know, you can't come around the hospital or whatever, because they were saying they were trying to finesse certain monies or whatever.
But wait, at that time, the mother of your child is still kicking, still.
Yeah, there. Yeah, but you know, she's starting to wear away.
And that's why they took that's why they wanted the power of attorney and everything like that.
They were prematurely making their play.
Because they were lining it up.
They were lining the situation up. Right.
Okay.
So mid-November, matter of fact, today's November 19th, 8 years ago today is when my parents came down, and it was the last day that I saw my daughter's mother, because they made a hostile situation and my parents had to come down and try to reason with them. Cops were called on me saying I was trying to take my child. Like, it got really, really nasty.
Oh my goodness.
And I just told my daughter's mother, I told her, I love you. I'll be back in a couple weeks. And keep your phone on you. They turned her phone off. So I knew, okay, I know what game y'all gonna play. Let me start my paper trail now. I'm gonna make phone calls, I'm gonna leave messages. And if you can't get messages, then I'm going to send text messages to you. So that way there's a record outside of me somewhere saying I was in contact with you.
Wait a minute, dog. It's like this is crazy, bro. Like, this is crazy. Like, it gives me like chills. Like, to even talk about this. So at the time that when this was going on, you realize that she has stage 4, she might not be around, but then you also realize that the parents were trying to make a play for your daughter, bro. Like, you realize all of that in like a matter of like 6 months. Like, how the hell did you stay stable, bro? Because that's one of those things where it's like, you want to, man, like, let's keep it real. You want to kill somebody, bro. How did you mentally stay focused, man?
At that point, honestly, it was just, I was a dad. And it was, you know, as tough as the times were, because even when I was in Buffalo, when I first got there, I didn't know anybody. So it was, I was a dad, and even though we weren't married, like, I'm somebody's husband. So, like, this is my family.
Yeah.
So while everybody, like, my daughter's an infant, so she can't do anything. And, you know, like, I got a psych degree. So even though if I ain't no therapist, like, I know one of the things that my professor always said that just stuck in my head was children are geniuses until they're 5 years old and their parents mess it up.
Wow.
So, you know, like, while this was going on, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer back in New York. So, like, I didn't really have anybody that, like, you know, like, I would just call and talk to my friends, whoever, you know, like, even though everybody, right, whoever will pick up, if, you know, everybody knows, all right, I'm going through some shit. So, like, you know, people know, like, all right, hey, if this person's here one day, if that one's there, like, I'm going to find somebody if I need to talk to just kind of talk to. And, you know, as fathers, husbands, caretakers, I feel like we're almost as if like we're the eyes behind everybody that's seeing whatever's coming along, but we're also the first line of defense.
Yeah.
Yep. So if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. Because you see everything, but you're going to get hit first. The reason you can see everything is because you're preparing to get hit first anyway. You're going to see everything first.
That's the reason why men are, I feel, are more wired to compartmentalize and separate how we feel from things. What we do is often we process things logically and then deal with how we feel. And maybe, you know, that's the seeing the things from far away is the logic part. And then logic says build the wall. So while everybody else is marching forward, while you're seeing everything that's behind, like, from once you take a step back, while everybody else is kind of in front of you, just dealing with their lives, you take a second to just kind of process and how to deal with how you feel with things, because feelings are subjective and they're always going to change. Mm-hmm. So we kind of know that. So let's just let all of this happen. Like, let's deal with it here first. And then once we have a better idea of how we feel, deal with our feelings.
And that's I think that we're, like you said, we're kind of like wired to do that. I don't know if it's because of our, you know, the way that we're raised or just something that, that pops out. But it's also like it could be detrimental also, man, because it's very easy to, like, especially during a situation like that, it's very easy for you to, like, shelter yourself and, like, pick a corner and hit a fetal position. You know what I mean? And be like, man, like, this is just too much for me. I got nobody to, like, not that you don't have anybody to talk to, but I just don't want to open up to anybody right now. And it's just like, it doesn't just go away. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just sleep it away. So it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, that's where, you know, you find people to talk to or something or whatever. You know, I'm not going to say I haven't picked up some. I definitely have PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, for me specifically, it's just, all right, when it's time, when I'll find, I guess maybe through this, I found my own way to deal. And I think, hey, you know, God gives us all, he don't give us anything we can't handle or deal with. And we all have our unique ways of how we deal with things. I guess, you know,
you found
I was built for that storm. Right.
Do you think that there was a moment there when things were going down that you kind of like felt like you hit rock bottom? Like, did you ever have a feeling like that where it was like, holy crap, like this is the worst it's ever going to get. And now it's time to, like, bounce up and make this happen my way.
I've had several points like that, honestly. I might have had one of those last week.
Nah, but I mean during the whole, like, custody. Because I think a lot of people, like, they hit that rock bottom, and it's like I have a few friends that dealt with custody issues. And I remember one friend telling me that he went to court, and he felt like the judge didn't want to hear anything from him because he was a male, and it looked like the judge was like a bitter old lady that just didn't love men. And he called me and he was like, man, I just want to give up. And I was like, no, dogs, you can't.
That's,
you can't give up. Like, you can't. Like, your daughter needs you. And if you don't get custody of her, the mama might lose, and, you know, she might be in foster care. Like, you can't give up.
Yeah.
But he hit that bottom where it was like, holy crap, like, this is over.
I personally, maybe not in that way, but I know what the feeling is, because even just going into once my daughter's mother died and I found out about it through Twitter, which was nuts.
Oh my goodness.
But I felt a sigh of relief that day because I knew, okay, now the legal battle can start and the gloves can come off. And as no matter how nasty it can get, she's not involved. So I knew, I guess in that sense, like, basically, well, I guess I have to tell a little more story to kind of, and then where you're going, I guess it'll make sense. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, I had no job because I've been bouncing around from cities, and then I was a product of the recession. So, you know, like, that's all we were doing in 2009 to 2012, is just bouncing from place to place with no real anything to say, okay, hey, I've been doing this with a skill set for years and years, you know. So I was hustling, you know.
So you were trying to get your life together while also having to deal with this.
I was 25. I was when my daughter's mother passed, I just turned 26 2 weeks before that.
Wow.
And
you're just trying to get all your ducks in a row, and now you got to deal with, you know, something in life that you can't control.
Right. But, you know, it was just, So, like, I filed paperwork in New York for custody because just even, you know, like, my name wasn't on the birth certificate, but I thought we signed.
Why was that?
I thought, well, we both thought that I signed the birth certificate, but basically it was a form that was just saying, hey, this is your daughter's name. Mm-hmm. But, you know, while we're dealing with birth, you know, the, like birth, we're also dealing with cancer stuff. So, like, you know, there's so much paperwork and a child.
Yeah.
Some days you don't know what you're signing, because while you're dealing with, while you're changing a diaper, you're having conversations with family and nurses and doctors on what hospital you're going to stay at and negotiating with them. Can we stay in a maternity ward? You know, like, so it's easy for something to get lost in the fray. And that was something that her parents knew and tried to run with.
Oh, they took advantage of that shit. They leveraged it. Oh my goodness.
Right.
That, yo, I don't know them. I don't, you know, no offense to them. I don't, no offense to you, but that's some corny ass shit.
That is some corny ass
shit to do, because it's like,
oh, it gets more fun.
Cause you're dealing with so much already. And then you're going to try to like do like an underhand, like slick maneuver. And it's like, come on,
right,
man. Like I'm hurting too. And y'all going to throw this on me too? Like, come on, this is dirty.
Yeah. And, you know, so we do everything in New York, and they, you know, all right. First hearing is January 4th, 2012, which I absolutely love that they got served with papers, because that was my daughter. That was my girl's birthday. So her first birthday, not on earth. Yeah, you got to be in court with me over my child, just to let them know, like, hi, I'm not fucking around with y'all.
Yeah.
You know, like, no matter what.
And they should be mourning themselves. Like, at that right. moment, it's like, man, the first birthday, my daughter's not here. Like, you know, you got to sit and relax and kind of, like, mourn. And you know, karma, bro. You know, karma.
Right, no
karma
matter.
Comes.
Right, like I said, hey, the gloves were able to come off. And it was like, look, no matter what, the ain't nobody going to be able to raise my kid better than me.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. Y'all are mourning, I am too. We didn't have to do things this way, but no matter what, this is my kid.
Yeah, so
sorry.
So setting the stage, so just to recap a little bit, you had a child, you found out that mm-hmm. your soon to be wife, right? Or future mm-hmm. wife has stage 4. Then you mm-hmm. had the parents knowing that, hey, you know, his wife might not be around anymore. We want custody of this child. You find that out, and now you gotta deal with the court systems and death.
Yes. Yeah.
Not, you know, usually when you hear about custody battles, you hear about the bitter baby mom or the bitter baby dad. This wasn't a bitter baby mom or baby dad situation. This was a death situation that the parents kind of like leveraged. Like I can't even fathom why they would do it. Like,
well,
like, was it to keep her memory? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what was it?
I think, you know, like I said, everything kind of goes back to everyone's parents. And I think them specifically, just in not only the loss of their daughter, but just without getting too much into her situation, with some stuff like they dropped the ball a bunch of times with their daughter.
Okay.
And somewhere in feeling like this is a chance to kind of do it again or rectify some wrongs in their own hearts about how they dealt with stuff. Like, that's the way that I look at it. And, you know, many times all of the vindictiveness or whatever, like, I mean, I tell my daughter and my nephew all the time, like, anger is a tertiary emotion.
Yeah.
So when people are anger, bitter and stuff like that, that means, like, in order to be angry, you have to have been hurt by something. To be hurt means you were disappointed. To mean you were disappointed means you had expectations. So follow the chain of whatever those things are, and then you can kind of humanize people. And I guess that's how I looked at it with them. Like, you know, they lost somebody, and I know what fucked up things went on. So in their own mind, their hearts, they're trying to right some of their own personal wrongs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same
token, that's between y'all and God.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. While they're doing that, they're also saying, they're also throwing up a big middle finger to the dad. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And that might not be intentionally. It might be unintentional, but it's still finger to the dad, and that sucks.
Oh wait, no. Like I said, this gets more fun,
dude. It's already crazy.
No! This is January 2012. So we go to court. They show up over the phone, take a DNA test. They're saying, something like, can we postpone? Because, DNA tests, all right, we'll be back in 2 weeks. They're like, oh, well, we can't make it then. And so they set a date for March 1st to come back, took the swab. Of course, the kid is mine because...
Cause y'all knew what's up already. That's it. Y'all knew what's up.
Right. You're gonna make me play this song and dance, but here's where that came in. So Nassau County Court, like, they were real helpful to me because they saw one, I was dealing with some bullshit, and look, I'm just trying to get my daughter. Mm-hmm. So the stenographer walked out like after the case was, because they were saying, now that you're on the birth certificate, you're legally the father. Okay. The stenographer walked out and said, hey, the magistrate told me to tell you, but you didn't hear this from me. Your next step, file for custody downstairs. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, let me go. So I walked out and I spoke to some family members on my girl's side of the family. And they said, we don't know why, but we're just telling you in our heart, it says file in Virginia. So if that's March 1st, March 6th, I'm on a Wednesday or whatever, that Monday, I was on Chinatown bus to Virginia.
And that's still with no full-time career, loads of cash, no trust fund. Just
Chinatown bus
just,
for 20
just the
bucks.
Love of your daughter. The love of getting her back.
For the love of my daughter. So I'm on the bus with everybody there is selling crack and got work under the bus. Like, yeah. That's, I'm on the bus with who everybody in a couple of years became SoundCloud rappers, so I get there. I stay with one of the cousins on the side of the family. I fill out the paperwork. We go there, we hand it in. Now I already bought my Chinatown bus ticket back for 2:30 to go back to New York. They file the paperwork, and then someone from the back room says, "Chad Milner, yes, can you come in the back for a second? Okay, we have some questions to ask you. Okay, so you're here for yada yada yada. There's a custody hearing tomorrow for your daughter filed by her grandparents based on the grounds that they don't know where you are."
What? Hold on a second, dude. You telling me that you went all the way down there to file for a custody hearing and they already had started the process without telling you shit?
They asked me, did you know anything about this? I had no idea. Like,
they didn't know where you were. That they didn't know.
Right. And I said,
what? Goodness.
No, that's false. Here's all of the legal paperwork from the case in New York. Here is a copy of the paperwork that they were served with to their house here in Virginia. Here's all of this.
Yeah, here's the receipts. Like, here's the receipts, man. Stop lying on me.
Okay. We're going to add you to the docket. Be there tomorrow. Like I said, I ain't got clothes. We went to K&G. Or wherever it was, it might not even been. It was Burlington. We went and got me a suit and tie, one of those from Burlington, that that come in the packet for $20. And I think I might have had we found a pair of pants, and like I had Nike boots on. Like, I looked like someone that was going to court
for drug charges.
that's exactly what I look like.
you weren't ready for that.
Right. We're gonna fly this up as much as possible and make me not look like I'm here for a drug charge. But okay.
Because it matters. Because I think this is something that I've learned from other dads, where it's like when they go to fight for custody, they everything's against them already, right? Or at least they feel like everything's against them. So they at least got to come dapper.
And booted, yeah. You know, we're going to take the earrings out while we're in court, you know, and just, and, you know, so, like, I just sat on the side and, like, I saw them come in. They came in with their lawyer, like, all happy-go-lucky looking, like, whatever it was. And then one of them saw me.
Oh, shit. It was like a ghost.
Yeah. And I just looked like, yes, motherfucker. Like,
I'm here.
The father, he tried to do a Jedi mind trick. Like, oh, hey, how you doing? I'm like, what's up?
Did he say, I love you? Did I miss you? Any of those funny phrases?
No, you know.
All right. So he didn't bow down too much.
I mean, he's a military guy. So he's like, you know, he knows how to mind trick things. But the thing is, what was the problem was, I may not be military, but I'm really good at these games too, sir, which is why I'm here. So, you know, we show up in court and, you know, they say, all right, May 21st, we'll do a final hearing. We're going to give my daughter a guardian ad litem, which is, you know, her own person, you know, a lawyer to act in her interest. And because it's Virginia, so basically all you need in Virginia, like, is your name to be on the birth certificate, because the police and nothing, they don't deal with civil issues because it's a Commonwealth state.
Oh, wait.
So they don't deal with it.
Wait, what does that mean? That you can't do any...
Commonwealth means basically they got their own funny laws.
Yeah.
So one of their laws is that, you know, like, police, they don't deal with, like, if I call and tell a cop, like, yo, someone's beating up on me. Like, if I got a battery, let's just say I had a girlfriend who had a battery, like, they don't deal with civil disputes. Like, you know, if you call, like, oh, you and your wife or something get into the fight, and you're like, oh, I'm going to call the cops on you.
Yeah, they'll take
in Virginia, you. Right. In Virginia, they're going to be here like, look, we had the phone called on us. There's nothing we can do about it. Bye.
Yeah. Just don't hit each other. If you hit each other, then it's then it's a different issue.
So one of their laws are like, one of their Commonwealth laws are, if you can prove legally you are the father, you can take your kid. Bye.
Mm-hmm. And you had that proof. Yeah. You had that with the paperwork.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I wound up doing was I went back to New York without my kid that time, only because I wanted to lawyer up. And even if it's just, I'm going to show up in court here and I know what my rights are, whatever, I'm going to play the part, because I know in theory the deck is stacked against me.
So what you're basically saying is, get yourself a lawyer, because you don't want to take any chances. Like, this is that serious that it takes an investment, and you need to be on top of your shit.
Even if it is just for the song and dance.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, you know, that time I'm a parent now, so I got my first, you know, that first tax return of where I could claim a kid.
Yeah.
Ooh. So I use that to pay for a lawyer. And to have a retainer. And I knew a lawyer in Virginia because of a whole other legal situation with the parents. And I told him, I said, you know me already, but it didn't click to him just yet, because he's a lawyer and he got a bunch of clients. But so April 2nd or 3rd, my mother had surgery because she was breast cancer. So a week after she had surgery, we drove down to Virginia, like, all right, we know now I have all legal rights to get my kid. I'm coming to get her. So I called my lawyer, told her, look, I'm in Virginia. I know the cops are going to, you know, I can't do anything with the cops, but we're here at the sheriff's office just to let them know what's going on. So if someone calls and says something funny, y'all already know at 8 a.m. I'm here.
So we went there. So you notified the authorities, even though you knew the authorities couldn't really
right,
do anything.
Because I knew they was going to call the cops if I came and said, hey, I'm coming to take my kid.
Oh, and it's
I
no
have
surprises.
Legal rights.
Yeah, now it's no surprises. When the cops hear that call, it's like, yep, we've been warned. We know what's going down.
We've been warned, right? So we went there first. I told the sheriff, and he said, "Oh well, you know, if you have a case, if you have a hearing in 6 weeks, then you can wait till then." And I'm like, "Sir, I haven't seen my daughter in 5 months, and her mother's dead. You mean to tell me to wait? Here's my lawyer on the phone that knows I'm here." Mm-hmm. Okay. So then they call, you know, so my lawyer, he calls the court, which is right across the street. The guardian ad litem comes over and says, "Okay, I spoke to them. We're going to do an impromptu hearing for temporary custody tomorrow." I'm like, "Can I see my kid?" And she says, "Okay, you know, because you haven't seen your daughter, then we're going to, you know, we'll even grant you to have, you know, to have your daughter for the day." And like, you know, by the end, my daughter, 5 months is a difference. Like, you know, I missed her first Christmas. I missed her first birthday, you know.
Dude, smiles, giggles, man. There's a lot of first things that you miss. And it's like, you didn't have the choice. You know, that's why I talk to a lot of dads that, you know, their wives will tell me, "Man, they're deadbeats." And it's like, you know, when I talk to them, I'm like, "Man, you had a choice, bro." You know, and here comes Chad with no fucking choice.
Well, here's the thing, you know, many times fathers, especially when it's a legal situation and stuff like that, aren't trying to be deadbeats. Mm-hmm. It's just, you already, like, you're fighting your fight the best way that you know how. You don't have anybody, like, I happen to have the right people around to really help me out. Yeah. So, like, even when I got there, when we went to court that next day, you know, they said, you know, Sydney Milner has been in custody with her grandparents since approximately September. I'm like, "No, that's not true." Because what they were trying to do by saying that, and this is the reason, like, going back to January while they were trying to hold off, mm-hmm. by saying approximately September and March, that meant my daughter was in Virginia for six months and she has residency in Virginia.
Mm, and then that throws your case.
So then I would only be able to fight in Virginia and nothing in New York.
Yeah, because right now you had Nassau and you had Virginia.
Right. But even with that said, and my daughter lived in Buffalo before that.
Mm. Yeah.
So she was still a resident of the state of New York. So that's what they were trying to hold off to. And had we done anything in May, 6 months, yada, yada. So no, it's April. If it's April at this point, it's like, "No, my daughter has not been there." I got to tell you, April 14th would make 6 months since she's been in Virginia. She's still a New York resident. Mm-hmm. Like, I know my shit like that.
How bad would it have been if you waited those 6 months? Like, would it have changed the outcome, or would it just extend the situation? Like, do you know?
It would have given me a little less leverage, because basically I would have only been able to do custody or anything in New York. I couldn't have done any, because you see, I had my case in New York basically. Mm-hmm. I would have had to have thrown my whole case out of New York, because it'd have been like, "Your daughter's not a New York resident."
And then you had to start all over in Virginia and then go through all their protocols.
Right. Even though the other thing about Virginia is, because they are common law, no matter what, look, my name is on the birth certificate. Legally, I'm the father, took DNA tests, all that, you know, and shut all of it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the outcome probably would have just been the same. It would have been longer and lengthier, right?
They were just trying to do everything they can to stack the deck of basically playing on all the stereotypes of fathers are not around for their kid.
So they were delaying the process to push it all on you.
Right. Yeah, right, and it's right. Like, no, he's just, so their last Hail Mary for thing in court that day. Like, you know, like I said, I had a great support team. Somebody I write about all the time, I call my big bro Barry. He just opened a Subway franchise in Brooklyn. He said, "Yo, if they ask if you got a job, you tell them you work at my Subway. Mm-hmm. And if they got to call me, I got you." You know, they ask the question, "Do you have a room ready for your daughter?" "Yep." "Do you have X, Y, and Z?" "Yes." "Do you have a place to stay?" All of these things. And the only thing, their last Hail Mary that the parents had was, you know, the mother had cancer in utero. So we started doing tests here, and they're like, you know, a hematosis test. And my lawyer's like, yo, that's a test that could be done anywhere, Your Honor. Like, and then that's when it clicked with my lawyer. He was like, I know them. I had a case with them. And I was like, and that's when I said to him, that's when we met. And that's how I got your number. He was like, oh, okay. Like I said, they always tried to leverage the legal system for some shit. Mm-hmm.
They thought they were smart. Well, they were smart, but not.
They were smart.
They ran into somebody a little bit more. Not even smarter, just on point. I think it wasn't that you were just on point. It was you had a purpose, and the purpose was, yo, I want my daughter. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna do whatever I got to do to get this done.
They never liked me because they had their daughter in a bubble, and I was the one that burst the bubble. Like, nah, here's how the world is. And it was kind of like that was ultimately their beef with me. And it was, I guess I just have this thing where you can see, yo, I ain't for the fuck shit. I see you for who you are. And it just kind of added on top of the in-law thing.
So they try to Hail Mary, and I'm assuming they got shut down.
The judge said, the only way that I can see, the only way I could give y'all custody is that he's not an unfit father. So I have to follow the Constitution. It's his kid. Bye.
Ooh, how did that, when he finally hit that gavel and said, yo, it's a wrap.
She.
Oh, it was a she. Ooh, even crazier, because we hear stories, bro.
It was Virginia, so it was a white lady she.
So when she hit that wood, man, what was the first thought in your head, man?
My mother was outside of the courtroom with my daughter and holding her while we were going through everything. And even when we came in, the judge was like, oh, this is the Sydney everyone is fighting about. And I just, you know, like, I still came back in May for the official hearing, but like, I walked out of that courtroom. My mother looked at me and said, how are things going? I said, we out. I ain't even give him a
let my tears just roll down. We out of here.
We out. Like, we literally walked out of the courtroom. I took a picture, and that's why, like, I posted every April 3rd. Like, it was my way of telling everybody, just, yo, I got my kid back. We out. Like, I took that picture, and we were in New York by 4:30.
Yeah, it's like rebirth.
They didn't get a chance.
Like, you were rebirth.
Right,
You didn't let them see them? You didn't let them see
them? No goodbyes. Fuck y'all. You had 5 months. We out.
Yo, and to the listeners out there, I condone this behavior. I really, really do condone this, because I know I speak to enough fathers on a regular to know that we get treated like shit a lot of times, man. So when you actually get to flip the script on somebody that's treating you like that, yo, there's no levels of petties that you can't go. Like, it was just bye.
Like, look, because had any of this stuff not happened, like, I'd have had no problem, yo, you know, my daughter going down there and visiting for summers or anything like that. But they fucked that up because, you know what, you fucked all the trust over. So,
You put me through hell, man.
It ain't even about putting me through hell. It's about trust. So if I can't trust you to do right in a situation like this, I for damn sure ain't trusting you or my child.
And that's real. So that's real. That's real, because that takes it away from you hurt me, and it puts it on you. Didn't just hurt me. You hurt her. She might not know
right,
but you hurt her too.
And
because you hurt her, you ain't fucking with her no more.
Constitutionally, fuck what anybody says to who or about you. If your name is on a birth certificate and there's DNA evidence, you have rights.
I love it, man. I love it. I mean, we covered your whole trial through that, right?
There was more.
I know there was more, but you know, we gonna keep that for a round two, because I think you and I
got
to do a round two, because they don't know who Chad is. I know who Chad is. So there's a lot of things that you and I could talk about that could help a lot of fathers out there because we've both been through various situations. You know what I mean? So for this one, I want people to know that, yo, there is a light at that tunnel, right? At the end of the tunnel. Like, you just proved that. So now, you know, to kind of like give a little recap or to try to like help out some of the dads, I'm assuming that the first piece of advice that you would give somebody is to have all their ducks in a row when it comes to legality and also paperwork. Am I correct with that assumption?
I'd say the first thing you have is a support team.
Your support team.
Because whatever you don't know, even if it's just, like I said, emotions and feelings are subjective. So if you're in the thick of it, you can't see things and you got other people that can. And if they don't, and whoever your support people are, they have their support people.
Yo,
so my support were the ones. We're going to go over in time
because this is no, this is perfect because this is too good.
Oh, okay.
This is too good because you're telling people,
we going to turn this out.
You're telling me that you need a support system. So, you know, I play devil's advocate, bro. So I'm going to tell you, what if I feel I don't have a support system? Like, what's my next step? Do I pay for that support system? Like, do I just pay for legal advice or what? Like, how do I go about forming that support circle if I'm one of these dudes that's always been sheltered and don't really get out there to talk to people? You know what I mean?
You have some, well, that's the thing. It's kind of like how the internet works. And like to parallel it like that. I've got my social circle. So if I share something to my friends, they've got their friends. So like, let's just say I didn't know anybody. I only knew people in Virginia through my daughter's mother.
Okay.
So when I was going through whatever, like, I called my friends and my friends helped me with people they knew. But if it was when I was in New York, I called my man from middle school. And I was like, oh, your mom's a lawyer. Can I ask her some questions? I don't have any money, but like, can I ask her as a family lawyer what to do? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yo, I'm gonna tell my mom and I got you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and everything was a phone call to friends. And because even if it's just I'm in the thick of it and I can't see the forest from the trees, someone else from the outside can. And it can be your man's. It can be somebody. Sometimes it can just be a fucking stranger who would just say, like, you know, like even the help that I got where I was pushing paperwork in December 2011. They're like, this normally takes a little while, like. And we about to break for holiday, so you may not get a hearing till the end of January. Oh, you can't make copies here. But even those people, like, you just show up with and like, look, hey, I just came to place. Like, look, I don't have help right now. And my daughter's mother just died, and these people are trying to strong-arm custody. I tried to make copies of everything that I could. And they're like, all right, you know what? We're not supposed to do this. We'll make these extra copies for you. And something that would have taken like until the next week, and that would have pushed everything to mid-January, late January, 4 o'clock. They said, we pushed everything. We gave you a motion to show cause. January 4th is your date.
Do you think that that was, do you feel like that was, like you got lucky? Like you got lucky with the court system? Or do you think that this happens often if you're like super genuine about what's going on?
Here's the thing. Yes, and to both, because the thing is, like, and just to throw a human side on the court people, it's they're professionals. They're professionals at that, the same way you are with tech or anything else like that. So you, just because this is what you do day in and day out, they know how to smell bullshit off the rip. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, we know someone who's just coming in here and saying, hey, I'm just trying to do this for my child. More often than not, lawyers and magistrates, they know when you walk in the court, before you say a word, who's for real and what's bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, so some of it, you know, like, you know, there's nuances to people's being jaded. You know, I think for mine, it just happened to be a great story because it's like, oh, this is, you know, it was right before Christmas. And, you know, like the stars aligned in everything for my situation. Oh, my daughter's born on Valentine's Day. Like all that shit just made it you know, and it made it a cuter story than it is, in the sense of, I just went in there with a look of desperation, like, look, even if it was just to my support people many times, I don't know what to do. I'm 25 dealing with shit that my parents haven't dealt with. Like, yeah. You know, like, I'm just, you'd be surprised how often people are willing to help someone who can just simply say, I need help.
That's
how we became friends.
Yeah, but I agree with you, and I think like that's something that's really difficult for dudes to do, man. Like it's hard for
absolutely.
Us to put our guard down and say, yo, you know, it's not that I'm vulnerable, I just need a little bit of help. And I don't know if it's because we don't like to ask for help or we just don't want to get shut down. But like for me, like I've learned that nothing happens until you do it. And that's what you just did. That's what you just said, which is like,
we are,
you went out
men,
there, you started the process, and then you continued the process because you were able to say, hey, there's a bigger calling here, right? Where it's the custody of my daughter. So I should have no shame in asking for help. I should have no shame in getting all my receipts together. And I should have no shame speaking my truth.
Men, specifically men of color, we have this extreme fear of rejection.
Yep.
Because ultimately, the world is made to reject. Just as a man, hey, you trying to go and meet women, you're going to get rejected 1,012,000 times. Like I said, even if it's just a complex with us from our parents, you know, there's rejection in that. So, and compartmentalizing thing, and once you realize, oh, that's a lifestyle of thing, the hidden thing behind a lot of the quote-unquote male pride and ego thing is this fear of rejection and being misunderstood. Mm-hmm. Many times the man who's just sitting there that's not vulnerable, like, he's sitting there saying to himself, I wish I had someone to be vulnerable to about, but I'm afraid that if I show this, they're not going to accept me. Like, that's the script that is playing in every man, especially as one of color, for almost every situation you walk into. Even if it's just, yo, I got to go in there for a meeting and my hair is a certain way because this is just how I am in my culture. Any of that, it is this thing of, you know, like, even if it's, you know, like, yo, that bully walking down the block, it's like, yo, what you looking at? What they're really just saying is, don't look at me. I'm afraid. Don't see me for who I am.
Yeah, now I got to act tough. Now I got to act tough just to shield who I really am.
To shield that hurt and that fear of rejection.
So I think it's almost like I want to say that one of the best things that you could do when you're fighting for custody is to let go of your ego a little bit, right? But still be prideful of what you're trying to accomplish. I guess if that makes sense, where it's almost like as males, we don't like to get rejected. We don't like to feel like fools, right? But in this situation, mm-hmm. there's going to be moments where you're going to be completely lost. So it's okay for you to feel like, all right, I might not have everything together, but I'm super prideful because I'm actually trying to do this. And I think that pride, the pridefulness of actually trying to do it is what like kept you going. Because I know a lot of fellas that probably would have said, man, this is going to be an uphill battle, man. I don't know if I could do this. And I didn't really hear that from
against you.
What I heard from you was, yo, it's going to be an uphill battle, but ultimately the top of the mountain is me getting my daughter. So it's worth whatever comes my way, good or bad. As long as I get her ultimately, yo, it don't matter.
I'll deal with me later, because no matter what, nobody can do for my kid like I can, even if it's just straight down to half of that DNA is mine.
Mm-hmm. That's the
so I know that look and what it means, because it's my look way more than somebody else does.
Is there anything that you have done differently? Because it seems like you had your things together. Like you have receipts. You had your paperwork. You had your receipts going. You had the support system. But more importantly, you had the tenacity to go get it. So what would you change?
In that sense, nothing really. I mean, I just saw some of it, you know, I guess it's my faith and just whatever else, like, you know, hey, God, have your way. And, you know, just this, my personal mantra of everything is going to work out because I'm me. Yeah. But, you know, like, I've changed that to, like, not saying everything is going to, everything has worked out because I'm me. Like, no matter what, that's just how I live my life. And somehow or another, you wind up lucky because, you know, like, I guess that mindset, it makes me prepare for any and everything, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know. So no matter what, like, I'm my own fucking star player. So if I don't believe in me, nobody else will. And that's when, you know, people are willing to help. Because the thing is about people, as much as people suck, people want to be a part of something that makes them feel like they're doing good in the world. So yeah. All these people just, you know, like if I saw them in the street somewhere, they wouldn't have any idea, you know. But but it's just people always want to try to do their part to make the world a better place. So if you're honest about your intentions and stuff like that and people can see it, you'd be surprised who would be there to help you in what any kind of way, you know. And I think, you know, because of what I've been through and I saw what happened, like, that's why I started my blog. And it was just, yo, for all the people, whoever y'all are, that just helped me out. Like, here's my little girl, just raising her. And then once I started telling my story about stuff, that's when it connected with other people of, you know, I get phone calls from people. I'm like, yo, I'm going through a case in Virginia. Do you know a lawyer or, you know, any of that stuff? Like, you know, even if I realize, and that's why I guess I don't got no beef with even the in-laws or whatever, because my hurt and everything that happened with me has helped other people. Man. Even if it just helped one person. If so, you know, like, let's just say, hey, one person listened to this and someone took some from it and they just said, hey, fuck it, yo, anything... everything is going to work out because I'm me, and that changes just a little bit of how they see the world. Mission complete, you know?
And that's the realest thing you could say. And that's the reason I told you earlier before we even got on this phone call, like I have a few interviews lined up. I have some really, really dope people mm-hmm. that the community is going to be like, wow, how did you get him? But I needed this. Like this is one of those things that I could lie and say, yo, this was for the community, right? Which it was, but it was for me too, because this is a world that I've never experienced, right? And on top of that, what it showed me is, like, I've known you for the past year, right? But I didn't know what made you. And this situation mm-hmm. feels like it made you who you are, where it's almost like,
absolutely.
Like, remember when I talked about, like, rock bottom? And how when you hit rock mm-hmm. bottom, now you just fight for the top and you work hard and, you know, you do different things. Excuse me. You do different things. That's the way I feel right now. It's like, oh, shit, I get Chad now, bro. Like, this dude is fearless because he went through some shit.
Listen, you know, now that you say that, I can think of a moment where I, like, rock bottom, like, it was in Virginia because I was staying. And like, we were in Buffalo, like we the family did what we could, but like the two of us shared like a futon and was on a box spring with yoga mats. Like, that was our bed. And then in Virginia, I was just staying in this apartment, didn't know anybody. And I was just in an apartment for the most part by myself. And whenever the in-laws would call me, my blood pressure would shoot up to the point where I had my fingertips got numb.
Mm. It was just,
and like, all I had to get me through that time, honestly, was speaking to my mother who was going through cancer and just like, yo, you know, all I have basically like is to help you through your situation. You know, like if it's a funny joke or like I wrote her a silly poem about like those were the things that, but like there were days I didn't see any of that. Like, and just the, we drove like the apartment I live in, it was across the street from Christopher Newport University and there was a graveyard. And every time I would drive by it, I would just think, shit, one day that's, you know, my daughter's mother's going to be gone and I'm going to have to look at this kid and say, yo, it's just me and you, you know. I don't know how that's going to turn out. I didn't know how long I was going to be in Virginia. I was looking for jobs out there. I had an interview. I was about to get a job as an accountant and was just waiting for them to clear my references. You know, I went the last week in Virginia, I had like $3 to my name and just had people who were there, like family friends that just helped me out. Like I lived at 7-Eleven eating the $2, you know, taquitos, like, bumming Wi-Fi out of Starbucks off of a cheap tea. And it was just, the deck was really stacked against me. Mm-hmm. And it was just, yo,
you flipped
this
it,
is going
to
pass.
You flipped it.
Everything is, and no matter how bad things are, they will pass. And I just kept telling myself, yo, like if I'm 25 and this is the hardest thing I'm going to go through in life, everything else is pretty sweet.
Yeah, now it's just living and learning after that. And that's what I was alluding to, where it's like, now yeah. I get you. I get you. Like, I had you at 90%. You know what I mean? Now I get you, like, mm-hmm. to 98%. Maybe 100%. Like, I get the context.
That now. Other 2% is a trip.
No, but it's crazy. It's crazy because you never know what anybody's been through. So you never know mm-hmm. like what challenges they've have to overcome. And those challenges, they shape us. You know what I mean? They shape us differently. Like for me, my challenge was, you know, growing up, I didn't know we were poor. we were poverty stricken, Section 8 welfare. You know, I'm out there with food stamps, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. mentally, I didn't know that we were poor. I didn't know what that was. And that shaped me in a sense that now you give me $1 million and I feel like I'm the richest person ever because I didn't have nothing back then, but I thought I did. You know what I mean? But now that I'm older, I could look back and be like, damn, I didn't have shit. But what I did have was my support system. I had my family, and that's more important to me than the cash right now.
Absolutely. Let's like even talking, you know, and all of this, you know, when I started my blog in 2012, there were father's bloggers like Jeff Tepper, who I like, that was the person that found me and reached out. But like, there was nobody, there were no fathers of color just doing stuff. Like, it was just me. And then like, I was like, hey, I'm just kind of doing this and hoping someone sees something and, you know, hey, run with it. Don't forget me though, you know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, so even this here to where the, you know, to where the stuff now, and there's just so much stuff and kind of hitting a stride. Even if I gave my daughter a podcast, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if there were any other ones doing it at the time with a kid of color. Like, so, you know, but ultimately, like my story and testimony, you know, I can say to myself, a lot of what you see a lot of these other people doing, like, that are just running with stuff. I see dads on TV doing ads and all of this other stuff. Like, somehow, some way, I know I played a part in that. Yeah. And that's something to me that's rewarding, and seeing somehow or another my anguish and my story, it's helping other people find a way. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's everybody. That's everybody in the world, you know?
And you never know who it hits, man. Like you mentioned Jeff, you know, and you've known Jeff much longer than I've known him. I met him at Dad 2.0. And even with you, like, you were doing a project, which I won't talk too much about it because I know you didn't release it yet, which I'm still going to continue to beat you over the head over because you should be releasing that shit anyway. But,
We'll come back and do that when it's time to promo. We'll have more fun then.
Yeah. But, you know, even with Jeff, like, Jeff was, you know, yeah. when Jeff told me, hey, you know, I know this dude named Chad, he's doing a project. Can you hook him up? It was no questions asked. It was like, whoa, if Jeff says you good, you good. And it's just a testament to you never know who you touch.
Right. And it really was. I literally just did the same thing. I wasn't afraid to ask for help. Yo, Jeff, I know you know a lot of dads. Do you know someone from Staten Island? Because even though I'm a New Yorker all my life, like, I don't know a dad in Staten Island.
Yeah. And I'm proud to represent.
There you go, you know, but it really, like, it's the same exact thing. Hey, do you know a lawyer, or do you know what I can do next to try and get my kid? Oh, let me make a phone call. Boom.
Yeah. So do you think that's the number one advice, bro, for dads that are gonna start the whole custody journey? Like, do you think the number one advice is ask for help?
Ask for help, because somebody somewhere will help you. Just because we all know, even if, you know, the one thing I've noticed, and why I think even just the dad community, especially like this fathers of color thing, is kind of going somewhere, is because everybody's felt isolated in their bubble. And now there are all these resources. And the thing is, like, we're all dads. So at the end of the day, of course we want to talk about being a dad. Like, you know, anybody, like, some of them, you know, you got a nice little Rolodex, but, you know, even if it's just someone you reach out, hey, I'm doing something about dads, of course I want to talk about it, because everybody's just living in their bubbles, not feeling like they have anybody to talk to about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as soon as you find, you know, it's kind of like comedians when they say, oh, the one thing when they're in the room and they see another comedian, it's like, comedian, and we can talk about comedian shit.
Yeah.
It's like you're looking for another dad to just, yo, I feel you. You know how many times we just be somewhere and you meet a dad and you just like, hey, a dad, and before you know it, you're having this in-depth conversation about some deep shit that we're like, oh, I just needed someone to say this to.
Oh, man, like, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Like, I was just in New Orleans for a wedding, and we're over here at a bar partying, and all the dads are pulling out their phones to show each other their kids. You know, right, back in college, it was like, yo, check out this shorty I met, man. Like, she's next. Like, she's mine. Now it's, yo, check out my shorties. These are my kids. Right. I love these guys. over Hennessy.
Right. And in that same way, if you're just saying, so because there's that, and there's just this need to talk to someone, because, like, we have this thing of, as men, we often don't talk unless we deem it going to be productive. Yep. And even, like, I know a lot of men will be like, you know, like, there's just things you don't talk to your significant other, your wife about, not because you don't want to, but it's just, you know, there's certain things you could explain it, but she's just not going to get it.
That's
something, you know, and all these dads, especially us of color, like, we're just in our bubbles constantly going. So when there's someone else to just talk to about it, you know, if you just say to someone like, yo, I need help trying to get my kid. Even if, yo, let me see what I can do, or let me give you some advice, you know, like, because every dad is looking for that. Every dad is looking for someone to help them, or every dad knows what it's like to need help and feel helpless. That's the thing with fathers, especially as a color, like, we all have this learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. So when someone else just kind of comes out and for help, we want to offer the help that we know we didn't have.
And
we do it for nothing.
And you're spot on. You're spot on. Like, I want the listeners to really understand that, because there's time there, you know. All right, my Rolodex is stacked. I know some really, really cool people because of my work in tech and because of my work in hip hop. But
And me, you know.
Yeah, and you, you know, and you know, you're a cool dude too, you know what I mean? But
yeah, you know, I'm just, you know.
But you know, a lot of these people, the first time I talk to them, it's not about business. Like, I can't name the names of these people, but I've had people call me that our first conversation has been, I'm going through some shit with my baby mom, or I'm dealing with something with my kids. And I've had stars. I've had legit stars and people that we look up to cry on the phone over fatherhood. And what I've realized is that, dads need dads. That's it.
Well, that's why I'm going to speak this publicly on your forum and say that's one of your gifts, in the sense of you have something in which people trust you because they know your intentions are genuine and they feel like they can come to you because you want to help out. And there's an obscene amount of success in your endeavors in this because of it, because you see just that dads want to live it up with their kids. But at the same time, dads are going through stuff. And like, I'm not married, so I can't speak on, you know, I can tell, you know, I know some of the arguments you're going to have, but you know, you know, but
you can picture them. You can picture them.
Yeah. You know, I've been locked out of the house a couple times, you know, oh, you on the phone venting about me. Like, you know, I've been there, you know, but you know, you specifically, you have a gift, not only just a gift, because gifts are something that people don't do anything with. You have a gift that you are refining in real time in front of people, and people see it.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate
so that, next man. Year this so next year this time is gonna be real different.
Oh man, I appreciate that, man. But most importantly, I appreciate knowing you, man. Like, you just this is not an easy topic, bro. This is not an easy topic, and I'm gonna tell you why. There was times during this conversation when you talked about death and family, and it touched me, bro. Where it made me sad. You know what I mean? And these conversations aren't always the easiest to have. And what you just did for our community right now, even if it only touches one person, bro, I can't thank you enough.
I appreciate it.
You know what I mean? These are tough conversations, man. Like, anybody that's been listening to the podcast, this is probably going to be episode 24, I think, or 25. All of our conversations are full of laughter and craziness. This is one of those conversations that doesn't necessarily fit that mold, but fits the
context.
Yeah,
it gives nuance and context that of behind the laughter and the craziness and anything else, because everybody's got these stories, even if it ain't this, everybody got stories of heartbreak or whatever, you know. Like my story, you know, I've learned that it's almost eerie that I just talk very casually about some fairly tragic shit.
Hell yeah,
bro.
Hell yeah, I agree. You're way too chill right now, bro.
You know, but you know, it's just, to me, it's my story, and it's, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. I'll own it, like, you know, and I have my moments where, like, one of the things I've been doing is recording old posts of mine. And when I'm reading it, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I have moments where, like, I feel touched about shit. Like, damn. But, you know, you know, even in those times, I guess, and anybody's story, even the laughter and the hijinks is really, or whatever it is, it's just, it's everybody is sharing the parts of their story that they're comfortable with, to have someone else that understands. Man. Because even if you ain't been through what I've been through, like, you know, pain is relative. You know, sure, there's a difference between childbirth and a paper cut, but people can react to it the same way. Oh my God, this is the worst pain in the world. Yep. But, you know, whether it's a paper cut or childbirth, it's that reaction and that feeling people can relate to.
Yeah, it's still pain, man. It's still pain. Well, Chad, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I think I'm going to need a part two and a part three because I really want to talk about the podcast that you're doing. I want to talk about the Tim's Project. I mean, I want to talk about writing. I mean, there's so much you and I could talk about. We've both been around the block. But
well, we got some things we don't speak into existence. We got some things we going to do, and we're going to take this and talking about these things a few places. Now, like I said, in a year things are gonna be different. I'm already speaking to existence. We are gonna go some places and take this and do this publicly in some forums to open up some conversations.
Oh no, man, you know how my head works, man. I'm already thinking of a nice little event we could host out here in New York City for the dads. So, you know, that's something we got to talk about offline anyway. But but that's something that I think is needed, you know, that face-to-face, you know what I mean? Face-to-face with a couple of people in different situations.
Well, let's talk about it publicly. You know, just this little, you know, like I said, hey, as dad, you just plant those seeds with people later. So now, you know, whoever your audience is, they've got something to look forward to. And they're going to push you to do it if I don't.
Let's get it. Well, Chad, man, I mean, you dropped some, man, I don't even know if I should call them gems or some insights, bro, because I think for me, it's more insightful because I don't know that world yet. And I pray that I never have to deal with that world. But I know it's gems for people that are going through it right now. And I think the main thing that I've learned today is, you know, not only to have your support system, but to actually go for it. Meaning a lot of dads complain about what could happen in a custody battle. And those could happens deter them from actually going after it. And they basically say, yo, you know what? I'm cool with this. Like, I'm not going to deal with this. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of heartaches. She could have custody. I'll be the weekend dad. I hope that this conversation draws more of those people that feel that way to say, yo, you know what? It is going to be hard. But fuck ultimately, it's a huge win. Let me go fight this shit.
Yeah.
So thank you. How can people reach out to you, anytime, bro? How can they reach out to you?
I'm on all socials as I'm Chad Milner. Chad Milner. I'm Chad Milner. I'm on Instagram. You catch me on there, you'll just see my creative foolishness. I'm on Twitter sometimes. You know, I should do that more.
Yes.
You know, my daughter's podcast, Sydney Being Sydney, CYDNEY, it's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's there. My website is singledadventure.com. You know.
And the podcast is on YouTube. I saw it on YouTube.
Yes, that's right. It is on YouTube too. Thank you.
Yeah. Now I saw the last episode with your nephew saying he didn't want FUBU as a sponsor anymore. He didn't care if they came back or not. That dude is a funny guy. I like him.
that's my guy right there. He's turning out to be me at 13.
But Chad, man, you know, once again, thank you for your time, man. I truly appreciate your time and wisdom. You know, we're going to do a round two and round three. For the community out there, I said it in the intro, we learn from the good times and we learn from the bad times. Chad went through some rough times, man. I can't even call them bad times. I'm just calling them rough times. And he pulled through. So I hope that that anybody that's out there going through some bad times or some situations, times. Sticky situations, yo, I hope you guys pull through, and I hope you guys give it your all, man. That's what fatherhood is about, giving it your all. So thank you once again, Chad.
Word, no problem, man. Anytime.
Thank you to the community. You know what it is. Make your presence felt. Fatherhood is lit.